Thank you, Yolanda. It's such a pleasure to hear Patrick speak tonight. And you know, I hear him all the time, but it seems like he said, there's a million things to be said about the reality of the people of Haiti. What I'm going to try to do tonight is actually to spend some time talking about our role here in Canada, and particularly in terms of what the Canadian government has decided on our behalf to be our role. And in particular, there's this responsibility to protect doctrine that is enshrined in a document that the United Nations was dealing with as early as 2000, and recently they had votes at the UN, but they have not yet adopted the policy. But there are some important things in that document that you may want to be familiar with. As you know, and as Patrick just explained here, there's a huge difference between what is portrayed as the image projected of the reality of Haiti from what is really happening. And they play a lot on our perceptions and on our lack of knowledge of the history of people that have been painted as other. And Yolanda began by speaking about the fact that a lot of people here in Canada just assume that those of us who are living in wealthy environments simply have it because we deserve it and we worked hard. And the people of Kasishawan, for instance, don't have good water because, well, they don't have democracy, maybe. Or they don't have good leaders like it was in Oka, when there was the crisis in the Mohawk communities. In other words, Canadians are being trained not to look at history for anything. It's just that we are here, and it's the present that counts. There's no history behind it. There's no, and in fact, one of the tools used to justify the presence of Canada in Haiti, and I hear it again, that's one myth you didn't talk about, Patrick, that Canada doesn't have a colonial history. We hear that all the time. And of course, we have in our songs, you know, land of our forefathers and, you know, the two solitudes. Those were the words of our new governor general. I'm sorry, but if you say two solitudes and you're talking about British Canadians and French Canadians, what happens to the people who were there before they arrived? So again, this idea that perception is important. If you repeat a lie long enough, people don't even question it anymore. And so in that document of the United Nations, talking about the responsibility to protect, there's a statement here that the key to mobilizing international support is to mobilize domestic support, or at least neutralize domestic opposition. And that's why you will see Michael Ignatieff and all these scholars going right, left, and center doing presentations about how we have a responsibility to protect, and that we have a big military and we cannot be followers, we have to be leaders, and we're going out there. And I hear journalists who are supposed to be professionals standing with a straight face on national television and asking a question of a politician as to how long do you think it will take for us to rebuild Afghanistan? Just assuming that if the line says that we are there to rebuild, that must be why we are there. But I'm sorry, but if you look at the history of humanity, I don't know any country that has been built by foreign powers. So, here we are with supposedly scholars, people who have spent years in university studying journalism, not able to ask an intelligent question. And we've lived that throughout the Haitian crisis. When there was the meeting in Montreal, and some of us entered in that meeting, and they were talking about how many millions of dollars Canada was going to give to Haiti. And we were just waiting for this one journalist to ask about the political prisoners, to ask what this $180 million is going to be used for. And really, the question was, how do we know they're not going to steal our money? Because, of course, Haiti is poor because the leaders of Haiti are thieves who've been stealing the foreign aid money that we've been so generous to give. You see, people don't question how come after 50 years of existence of the World Bank, which was created to eradicate poverty, the countries that were rich before the creation of the World Bank are rich, richer, and the countries that were poor before the creation of the World Bank are poor, yet the question is never asked, who the hell has failed at the World Bank? No. Instead, they are counting failed states. Just like the last 2 years that the Haitian people have lived that nightmare that we've never known before, you will never hear anybody asking Pierre Pettigrew, Denis Paradis, and all these fools that met at Meech Lake to decide that Aristide had to go, Haiti was to be put under UN tutelage, that Haiti was to have a new army and a new police. Nobody is asking all of these people who made the decision about their failure. Instead, they're parading their puppet that they imposed on the Haitian population, Gérard Latortue, but they're not parading them and telling them that they failed. They're actually saying that the Haitian people failed. Just like Patrice Lumumba after his assassination, and they have imposed Mobutu on the people of the Congo, it is the people of the Congo who are said to have failed, not the people who imposed Mobutu on the people of the Congo, while you have now a large population of human beings living in a rich country and in poverty. And when we read that document, if you read between the lines, you actually find out that they betray themselves. For instance, you read in that UN document, there is much direct reciprocal benefit to be gained in an interdependent globalized world where nobody can solve their own problems. My country's assistance for you today in solving your neighborhood refugee and terrorism problem might reasonably lead you to be more willing to help solve my environmental or drug problem tomorrow. So in other words, these foreign rich enriched countries, I don't use term like poor country and rich country, they are enriched countries and impoverished countries, because there's a link between the two. Those that are rich because they have impoverished other peoples. So basically, you have this relationship where rich and rich countries are having deals made among themselves on the back of the people that they're going to supposedly save from themselves. And if you look at another statement in that same document, the interest in being seen to be a good international citizen is simply the reputational benefit that a country can win for itself over time by being regularly willing to pitch into international tasks for motives that appear to be relatively selfless. Motives that appear to be relatively selfless. And that's why the CTV or Global Canada journalist is interviewing this soldier who came from Afghanistan. And you can hear the young man is totally brainwashed. He was shot at, I don't know, some of you might have watched it. And I'm watching this totally terrified to say that this is how they are justifying sending young Canadians to Canada. And most of the Canadian population has not even awakened to this fact, that these young men, when they die in Afghanistan, they are not heroes. They are dead. That's what they are. This sanitization of war that has taken place in the last few years make it possible for politicians to come out and say any kind of lie. Because those young men that are going in these wars are not going in there because of any kind of ideological understanding of why they're there. Most of them don't even know a thing about the place where they're going. And it's the same thing with regards to Haiti. A lot of the young men that went to Haiti thought that they were actually doing good. But in as happened with the soldiers from Brazil, for instance, when they got into Cité Soleil and Bel Air, they quickly realized that they had more in common with the young people they were being asked to shoot than they had with the elite that they were actually being asked to protect. Because there's a reality in Brazil that is very similar to what we have in Haiti. And that's why, for a certain moment, they started to get in trouble with the elite in Haiti. There's also another thing that needs to be said about that coup that just took place in Haiti. You will notice that the word coup is seldom used. In fact, at meetings of the House in Ottawa, there was a time that someone in the NDP probably, you know, forgot the line that the understanding they had among themselves and talked about the removal of Aristide. Okay? And the Bloc member said, no, you cannot say the removal, you have to say the departure of Aristide. He just departed, okay? But there's a reason why they were doing all this gymnastics around the word coup, because there was a document signed in 2001 at the Summit of the Americas, which says that any alteration or unconstitutional interruption of the democratic process will disqualify a state from participating in future summits. In other words, you cannot be part of the Organization of American States if you are a government that came to power as a result of a coup. But the text didn't even say coup. It says alteration or unconstitutional interruption of the democratic process. If what happened in Haiti is not that, I don't know what is. So you find yourself in a situation where in the first coup in 1991, the United States could hide behind the so-called Haitian army, which Haitians know is the CIA's army in Haiti. But the second coup, there was no such cover. Like Patrick Elie explained, it was the Marines, it was the Canadian soldiers, it was the French soldiers themselves who took the president, kidnapped him, and took him to the Central African Republic. So that's why they found themselves in a situation where they had to provide some legitimacy to the puppets that they've imposed in Haiti as if it was a natural thing. And for those of you who saw the film Aristide, the Endless Revolution, you can remember the face of George Bush standing in front of this camera saying, President Aristide resign. The Haitian constitution is working. And then, you know, pausing because he just couldn't find what lie to cover the previous lie he just uttered. And just very quickly, I will say that part of the challenge now for people in Canada who are doing solidarity with the Haitian people is not to fall in the same trap that the leaders of Canada has fallen into. That is the racist assumptions that color our behavior. That is, Denis Paradis, quoted in this article by Michel Vastel about the meeting they had in Ottawa, called the Ottawa Initiative on Haiti, was really saying that, well, from all pronostics, there's going to be 20 million Haitians by 2009, and this is a time bomb that needs to be stopped right away, et cetera, et cetera. Of course, I don't want to explain how frightened I am when I hear someone living in the enriched part of the world worried about how many poor people, especially poor black people, are going to be alive on this planet by such and such a date. I mean, some people read it differently than I probably read it. This overpopulation dogma is something that I find very scary for the most impoverished people on this planet. That aside, Denis Paradis, when he's talking and when you read what these people are saying when they talk about Haiti, they feel very genuinely that they are actually on a mission to save the Haitians from themselves. And unfortunately, that disease does not only affect people on the right. There are also, because it's the lack of historical grasp, we don't have a grasp of what really happened from 1492 to today that caused the world's wealth to be distributed the way it is distributed. Sometimes people actually believe that Canada is rich because we adopt democracy, and you know, Bangladesh is poor because they don't have democracy, completely obliterating the history of the past 500 years. And so you have people like Luigi Einaudi, whom I met December 31st, 2003, saying that the real problem with Haiti is that the international community is so screwed up and divided that they are actually letting Haitians run Haiti. That's what he said. But you have to realize that he didn't just say that. Less than 2 months after saying that, it was true that Haitians were no longer running Haiti. So these diplomatic skinheads, they have the powers to implement their most racist fantasies. And that's what we have to fight against in this world today. And so we cannot approach this thing without analyzing how our behavior has to be different than those of those people. And so when we hear them saying that the problem of Haitians is that Haitians are running Haiti, you have to be able to listen to what Haitians themselves are presenting as a counter-diagnostic, which is that our real problem is entrapment in a cycle of poverty, debt, dependency, instability, and foreign manipulation. This is the core of our problems. And all of it is linked to history, but not just history, but to present policies. Because right now, you're having an electoral process in Haiti where Haitians are actually fighting to enter the system. An election taking place in our own country, like Patrick mentioned. When the people voted February 7th, they knew that wasn't sufficient. Because Aristide was even more popular than Préval, yet he was overthrown. So they knew it wasn't sufficient for them to vote Préval. They had to stay in the streets and make sure that all the cameras of the world could know that they voted Préval. And when they tell you that Préval won this election at 51.20%, you need to realize that they came to that realization after the people have uncovered the ballots that were under the control of the UN dumped at a dumping ground where most of them were marked for Préval, and where Préval, who was called to say that, okay, he's willing to go to second round, said, hell no. I want an investigation as to what happened in the first round, because he had results of the ballots, and it's clear that Préval won this first round with at least 60-65%. Okay? So in reality, when they declared that Préval won, it was actually a cover-up. Because if they did do an investigation, it was going to be evident that in that dumpster, there wasn't only presidential ballots. They were attempting not only to steal the ballots of Préval, but also of the senators and of the deputies that are linked to his party. And so the battle is not yet won, because like you saw from the history, they controlled Préval during his last presidency through the legislature. And that's why there are now NGOs in Ottawa, such as FOCAL, who are writing documents saying that they're suggesting that Préval chooses the prime minister. Who did they suggest?
I don't know. But
I think that
from the opposition.
From the opposition. So basically, you already have foreigners identifying for Haitians what the system should yield as a result. Okay. So I'm not going to speak too much about that, except to let you know that the World Bank itself, in its own document. Document that came out December 2004, said that the transition period and the transitional government provides a window of opportunity for implementing economic governance reforms with the involvement of civil society stakeholders that may be hard for a future government to undo. That means those 2 years that just passed in Haiti, where we had an illegal government in every bone of its body, there's nothing about that government that was in accordance with the Haitian constitution, including the fact that they created a so-called Council of Wise, which doesn't exist in the Haitian constitution, which chose the prime minister, Gérard Latortue, who is supposed to be actually chosen by the elected president and confirmed by the parliament. None of that happened when Latortue came to power. And in fact, the constitution does not allow a man who's been living in the country for the past 40 years to just show up and be president. You have to have lived the last 5 years in the country. He doesn't meet any of these criteria. But not only that, according to the Haitian constitution, when there's a presidential vacancy, elections are supposed to be organized within 90 days. But immediately that the coup took place, the United States, France, and Canada made it clear that they wanted 2 years. And in this World Bank document, you can see why they wanted 2 years. They wanted to make reforms that even a legal government that would come afterwards would find hard to undo. And we have a very clear example of that by the presence of the UN force in Haiti and how Latortue, a couple of weeks ago, was forced to denounce his own decision. He signed a document with the UN to say that the Haitian National Police is under the command of the UN. When the media put the information out there, he said that, well, there must be a mistake because he didn't realize he was signing something like that. But you see, it doesn't matter for Latortue. He knows that he doesn't have to live with the situation. The fact is the UN force is in Haiti. The fact is they have already infiltrated the police with military people, with people that are linked to Latortue, with people that are linked to the former soldiers that came from the Dominican Republic. And so now you have the choice of dealing with that police that they have turned into an enemy force, or accept that the UN be present just in case the police try to organize a coup against you. Here we are with this catch-22, and Haitians have a new president. We don't yet have a parliament. We don't know what kind of tricks they're going to pull on us. The man that they parachuted on top of the Electoral Council, Jacques Bernard, fled the country after it was discovered that Préval had all these ballots in the dumpster, came up with a story that his farm was ransacked, and then immediately went to Washington to make declarations as to how he was actually the one trying to bring democracy to Haiti. And this man is back to Haiti now. And not only is he back, he's been heralded by people like Jean-Pierre Kingsley of Elections Canada as actually the champion of democracy in Haiti. And not only that, when journalists went to his so-called farm, they found no evidence at all of anybody having ransacked his farm. So he was lying. So here is the situation that we are facing right now, which I hope in the question period we're going to address some of these issues, because Patrick's position is very important, because he didn't mention that in his speech, and I take the liberty to talk about that. Patrick is one man who is very embarrassing for the Canadian government. I don't know if some of you might have seen CPAC's show, Ken Rockburn's interview with Patrick. How many of you have seen it? It played last week. But basically, Ken Rockburn interviewed the Canadian ambassador to Haiti, Claude Boucher, and then he interviewed Patrick Haley. And what Claude Boucher was trying to say in his interview was that Aristide actually is a man of the past. That's the kind of terminology they like to use, a man of the past, and that the people voted for Préval, and that Préval has nothing to do with Aristide, and that And then, you know, Ken Rockburn has done a bit of research. He said, well, but, you know, the people who voted said they, you know, they come from the same constituency as Aristide's constituency. And Patrick Kelly mentioned that, you know, there are 80% poor people in Haiti, so the demographics are not going to change. Whenever there's election, really, Lavalas is going to win. But what I wanted to make the point, though, is that Patrick Kelly not only served under President Aristide, but he's also a very close comrade of René Préval, who's been working with him for the past 30 years. And that's why when he came to Canada, they were asking him for the content of his conversations with Aristide. Because what they really don't want to do now is to have agreement between Aristide and Préval. Because if that happens, they're not going to be able to say to Préval that, you know, we are the ones who put you there with our 51%. When in reality, the people of Haiti know that it's not the foreign powers that impose Préval on them. They're the ones who actually rejected the coup, rejected all the candidates that were involved in the overthrow of Aristide, and chose the only guy who did not participate in the movement to overthrow Aristide. The message is clear. Thank you very much.